Hey, church. A little bit I'm thinking about sitting in down and having the guys come back out here. That'd be better, don't you think? Did you guys appreciate that? That was great. So, y'all are going to find this hard to believe, but I have two kids that are seniors in high school. He looks so young. I know. Never would have believed that, would you? But it is true. I have two seniors in this very room right now. I must have been very young when they were born, right? But here I am. So as a parent, right, it's my job to help the kids figure out what comes next. What is life after high school? Oh my. It's kind of hard, you know what I mean? We talk about colleges a lot. We talk about jobs and careers a lot. We talk about the pros and cons of dorm rooms or getting your own place, pros and cons of getting a motorcycle. Only cons, right? Yes, come on, tell Lance that after church, okay? Only cons. Then we talk about life after high school, right? Actually, I probably should just say we talk about life. What's coming next? This is tough, isn't it? Parents with seniors, Housers, you guys with me? Yep. Andersons, where are you guys at? You guys with me? Vegas, yep. We're all in this phase. We're figuring out what is the next phase of life. Last week, and it was just last week, I'm positive, we were worried about diapers and bottles and, you know, what the right dose of Tylenol is. And now here we are talking to kids about what happens when they graduate from high school. Tuition and loans are way worse to talk about than diapers. You know what I mean? Man. Lots of things in life are like that, aren't they? Where you kind of, God has built into the system this, you got to get from point A to point B. You know what I'm saying? Seeds are one example, right? Plants make a seed. Seed falls to the ground. It germinates. Sun, water, rain, you know how it works. And all of a sudden you got a plant. And that's the order it goes in. It doesn't ever go backwards. You can't skip a step. That's how God has built seeds to work, right? Kids are the same thing. All of us in this room started as a tiny little cell that you could only see under a microscope, right? And now here we are. I'm much bigger than a cell, right? So we got four chairs sitting up here on stage, pilfered from the coffee shop, I should add. Although before second service, there was a wicker chair right in the middle, which does not have anything to do with this service. It was a vicious prank that was played on me. So we have four chairs sitting on the stage. And it's going to be an illustration for the next few weeks of how to talk about discipleship. Sherm talked about this last week. We stole it from a book. We didn't make this up. But I think it is such a good illustration, a good example for us to talk about and have the same kind of common language where we can talk about how to get from point A to point B in discipleship, okay? Discipleship is one of those church words that we talk about. Sometimes I think we throw it out there and we don't even really, you know, we're not even sure what we're talking about, but it's just a fancy word for getting somebody from point A to point B. Somebody who doesn't follow Jesus now follows Jesus. That's how you make disciples. And we talk about it a lot in church because why? Well, Jesus, right? He told us right before he went back to heaven when he was here on earth that job one is to make disciples. We make things that look like Jesus. That's what we do. That's what a disciple is. Now, let's chat, shall we? Before we go any further in this sermon or in this series, I want to discuss this four chairs idea, okay? This four chairs is going to be great for us, for me to say, okay, if I look at my Christian life, I'm, you know, here. I want to be here. I'm certainly not back there anymore, but here are the things I need to do to move forward. It's going to be very useful for us as a church to say, you know, like on a whole, here's where we are in the church, and here's what we need to do to move forward and be better disciples of His. But it is never okay, here's the warning, it is not okay for me to say, Dick Huffington, you are a chair 2 Christian. I'm a chair 3 Christian, right? It is not okay for us to use this as a way to look down on people. Oh, amateur, you know, he doesn't have his act together yet, right? This isn't a way for us to judge other people. It's a tool for us And it's a church for us to kind of zoom out and look at where we are as a church, as a whole, okay? So don't go down. I don't want ever, if I hear anybody say, filthy chair too, Christian, I'm going to get upset. The important thing is that we don't want to get stuck in any one of these chairs, right? When we get stuck, that's where dangerous things happen. That's where Christian growth and development kind of stops. I need a volunteer. Jake Murphy, thank you. I see that hand, Jake. Good job. And everybody, Jake's terribly nervous about coming up here, but he's going to be great. I have a little illustration I'd like to talk about today. Jake, you look good today. How's it going, buddy? Come on over here and have a seat. On the step. There you go. Okay. This is Jake Murphy. He's not a Christian. He is. He is, but for this illustration, he is not. Okay. So before anybody ever steps into any of the chairs, they are, you know, non-believers, right? Maybe nobody's ever talked to him about Jesus. They're not interested in following him, and that's where they sit, right? Now, as a Christian, I want to make disciples out of Jake Murphy, right? I want to get him into chair one and chair two, three, four, right? Now, the one thing I could do is just, like, try and put him in the chair, right? So, like, you know, like, let me try again. Come on. Jake, all right, well, maybe, like, leverage? I don't know. Can we get this? Like, roll him. Who said roll him? Okay. Try as I want. It's not going to be very easy to move Jake Murphy into the chair, right? Okay? No matter how hard, no matter how bad I want to lead someone from non-belief sitting down here towards belief, I can't force him, can I? Jake, hey, come check out chair one. Check it out, Jake. Have a seat, buddy. Woo. Now that was easy, right? That's kind of the illustration I want to make. All of us have people in our lives that we wish were on these chairs, right? But we can't force them. Nothing we do can lift them into the chairs and move them to belief, okay? But what we can do is invite them to come with us. We can invite them to come and sit in these chairs and grow. Didn't Jake do a good job? That was fantastic. You can, there you go, buddy. I owe you one. I was kind of rude last night. I said, you know, I did buy your Applebee's the other week. You kind of owe me. Which is terrible of me. That was very unkind, but I do whatever I can to get some help. Jesus called people to follow him all the time. Have you all ever noticed it? This morning, we're going to look at four different times when Jesus called someone to move down the progression of chairs. Okay, he didn't use this illustration. We're making it up. But when he called someone to move from non-belief to belief, okay, we're going to talk about the different steps along the way. You guys heard of John the Baptist, right? John the Baptist was a very important man. He kind of paved the way for Jesus to show up on the scene. He was the pre-show before the main act. Okay, he prepared people for the coming of the Messiah. And in John chapter 1, which is on page 740, if you're using the blue pew Bibles, it's also going to be up on the screen. John chapter 1, verse 35 says this. Follow along with me. The next day, John was there again with two of his disciples. When he saw Jesus passing by, he said, "Look, the Lamb of God." When the two disciples heard him say this, they followed Jesus. Turning around, Jesus saw them following and asked, "What do you want?" They said, "Rabbi," which means teacher, "where are you staying?" "Come," he replied, "and you will see." So they went and saw where he was staying, and they spent the day with him. It was about 4 in the afternoon. Super simple story, right? John the Baptist sees Jesus, who he's been preparing the way for, right? Sees Jesus. And he tells his own disciples, "Look, there's the Lamb of God." Very significant. He's underlining, this is the guy we've been waiting for, okay? John's disciples start to kind of follow along Jesus. They tag along for a little bit. And this question that they ask is very curious to me. "Where are you staying?" That's what they want to know. And he says, "Come and you will see." Very simple, right? Did you guys see the little detail that John added? That, I lost my train of thought. Oh, they said that it was about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, which I think is a very interesting detail. It means kind of like, you know, it's late afternoon. They followed Jesus for a couple hours and they visited. They talked for a while. Come and you will see, all right? That is the invitation that takes people from non-belief, where they're sitting right here. They don't have anything to do with God, Jesus, the church, nothing. That's how we can invite them to move into this first chair, okay? Come and you will see. It's very simple, right? I feel like as Christians, like the longer we're Christians, we forget that moving, that step from non-belief to, let's say, curiosity, that's a big step. They are probably not ready to follow Jesus yet, right? That maybe for your average non-believer, they may never have followed anybody before, right? So the idea of following Jesus is totally foreign to them. So as Christians, I think one of the best things that we can do is just simply say, hey, come and see. Check it out. That's all we're asking. We're not asking you for, you know, to sign on the dotted line. We just want to have conversations with you. So let's say that God gives you an opportunity to talk about your faith, okay? This happens all the time. We have to pray that we catch it. But I feel like God so often is setting us up to talk about his son, and we miss it because we're not looking for it or because we're chicken, right? But God sets us up. So let's say you're with a coworker, you're with a kid at school, a friend of yours at school, family member, whatever, and God is just like bumping the ball right to you, and he's waiting for you to spike it, okay? So when that happens, what is your response? Do you say, hey, you should go to church? How many of you all have thought, oh, you should go talk to Sherm, right? How many of you all said, oh, here's a Bible, you should go read this, right? These are okay things, right? Sherm's a good guy, we like him, right? He's a good man to talk to, but in that situation where someone is talking to you about your faith, isn't it better for us to just say, hey, come and see, and allow them to come on alongside of you and kind of explore what it means to be a Christian? Like maybe it means, hey, you know, I was reading in the Bible, and I was reading in John 15, and it says that he's the vine and we're the branches. Like, what do you think that means? And you just talk to that person and have a conversation, dialogue with them. Or maybe it means, you know what, I got to be honest with you, I'm really struggling with this. We got this health problem. I don't know what to do about it. We're asking God to take it away, but so far he said no. And just explore that with this curious non-believer. You guys understand what I'm saying? Like, still hasn't given his life to Jesus, is not following yet, but he's curious. That's a very important thing. So do you all feel equipped to move people from non-belief to curiosity? How do we do at that as a church, do you think? Are we able to just simply say, hey, come and you will see? Not come to church, come alongside me as I figure this out too. That's chair one, non-belief to curiosity, right? Chair number two. Chair one, people are still lost, right? Not following anybody. But we're talking to them about what it means to follow Jesus. We're showing them from the Bible the things that Jesus said and did. So how do we help them move into chair two? Comes from John chapter 1 also, again, verse 43. It's real quick. I'll just read it for you. The next day, Jesus decided to leave for Galilee. Finding Philip, he said to him, follow me. Now that's different, isn't it? Come and you will see is very casual. Hey, come check it out. Follow me, well now we're kind of asking somebody something, right? If I ask you to follow me, you have to, like, you know, stop what you're doing and do the things that I do, learn the things that I teach, right? The first is exploration. The second is commitment. That's the difference. Chances are when you're with that person in chair one, you're talking to them about what it means to be a Christian, how much it costs, not money. I mean, we used to have this conversation in Italy all the time. What does it cost to be a Christian? Nothing, right? There's no card reader. Swipe your card before you follow Jesus. But then what does it cost to be a Christian? Everything, right? It's so funny. Like it's like a paradox, right? It doesn't cost anything. It's totally free, but it ain't free. It costs everything. So we're talking to that chair one person and being honest with them about, hey, Jesus is calling you to die to yourself. That's code for be selfless in everything, right? So the person in chair two, transformation is starting to happen, right? We're seeing changes in their life. Are they perfect? No. Are you perfect? No. Right? Everybody better be saying no. Who said yes? All right? My son. Okay. The Holy Spirit lives inside of the person that's sitting in chair number two, right? That's a big, big change. That means that God is working in them to make these kinds of changes they need to follow Jesus. But they are still maturing. What's it like to be around babies? Who has daycares? Where's Alyssa? Yeah? Who else has a daycare? Where is she? Where's your wife? Oh, she stepped out. I couldn't do it. Could you all do it? Be around babies all day? I'm kind of glad I have seniors in high school when I go by a daycare, right? Man, that's a whole different ball of wax. And sometimes I feel like it's a little bit like that when you're around baby Christians, right? When someone who has just started to follow Jesus, their focus is still on themselves, right? They're still trying to figure out what's in it for me. Now, please hear me out. There is no judgment involved in this. I'm just describing kind of the natural progression of how God works in our lives, right? It takes time for us to start giving up of the things that we want. Takes kind of a lifetime, right? But our job as the church is to take people wherever they are and keep heading that direction, okay? That's chair two. So we have curious non-believer, then we have new believer, baby Christian, right? Chair number three is very different. We learn about that from Matthew chapter 4. You can find it on page 677 or on the screen. Here's what it says. As Jesus was walking beside the Sea of Galilee, he saw two brothers, Simon called Peter and his brother Andrew. They were casting a net into the lake, for they were fishermen. Come follow me, Jesus said, and I will send you out to fish for people. At once, they left their nets and followed him. Going on from there, he saw two older brothers, James the son of Zebedee and his brother John. They were in a boat with their father Zebedee preparing their nets. Jesus called them, and immediately they left the boat and their father and followed him. And this always puzzled me a little bit. I mean, Jesus said, come follow me, and they literally dropped what they were doing and followed him. Their entire life changed, didn't it? He said, right now you're fishing for fish, that's great, but I'm going to teach you to fish for people. Which, in hindsight, we can kind of get what Jesus was saying, but what do you think they thought when they first heard Jesus say that? What on earth? Fish for people, what does that even mean, right? But that's what he was calling to do. Hey, what you're doing now, great, but I'll teach you to do something even more important, and that's fish for people. So kind of, moving from chair two to chair three means I'm letting go of it all. I'm leaving it behind. I'm leaving what I want. I'm leaving my occupation behind. Everything about me, I'm leaving behind to move towards maturity, right? Chair three Christians are growing, right? Their focus is starting to turn from themselves and what they want, and their desires, and it's turning towards others. It's a very important change, isn't it? What happens if we all decide to only concern ourselves with our own needs? Not good, is it? Right? We get ingrown and ill, sick. Churches are only healthy when they are looking outward, okay? Are we spending more time worried about the color of the carpet or the shrubs outside? Do we worry and obsess over what kind of music we're going to sing on Sunday? Or are we looking outward towards the lost people that are in our community, that are in our schools, that are in our workplaces, that are in our homes? You understand the difference between two and three, the change that takes place in people's lives? This is a tough one too. Chair three Christians are starting to realize they need to spend more time with people that aren't believers than with people that are believers. I love you all very much. You all are fun to hang out with. We're cool people, right? We like each other. But we have to invite non-believers into that fold. We have to be comfortable hanging around people that don't believe what we believe. We have to be okay to get where they are so that we can reach lost people. Are you with me? That's the difference. And I feel it. I got to push myself to do that because I like hanging out with you all, right? You all mostly agree with me and, you know, we believe the same things and potlucks are great, right? Now, chair four is a tough one. I actually gave a little preview of this last week in my welcome. I read from John chapter 15. And man, this is one of those passages that it makes me a little nervous. Okay, read it with me. John chapter 15. It's on page 729 or it's up on the screen. Here's what it says. This is Jesus speaking. I am the true vine, and my Father, so God, is the gardener. He cuts off every branch in me that bears no fruit, while every branch that does bear fruit, he prunes, so that it will be even more fruitful. You are already clean because of the word I have spoken to you. Remain in me, as I also remain in you. No branch can bear fruit by itself. It must remain in the vine. Neither can you bear fruit unless you remain in me. I am the vine, you are the branches. If you remain in me and I in you, you will bear much fruit. Apart from me, you can do nothing. If you do not remain in me, you are like a branch that is thrown away and withers. Such branches are picked up, thrown into fire, and burned. If you remain in me and my words remain in you, ask whatever you wish and it will be done for you. This is to my Father's glory, that you bear much fruit, showing yourselves to be my disciples. Bear much fruit. How fruitful are we as a church? You know, we're supposed to remain stuck onto that vine, right? Jesus is, you know, the vine. We're the branches that come off. He gives us what we need, water, nutrients, right? And our job is to what? Make fruit, right? And this is, I can't tell you how long I misremembered this passage. I thought that the gardener, God, comes along and prunes the dead branches. Is that what it says? Nope. He cuts off the branches that are dead, but the branches that are alive, that are making fruit, what does he do to them? He prunes them. What does that mean, right? That means, in this illustration, he looks at my life, and he says, you know what, Brian? If you weren't struggling with that, you could be more fruitful. Cut. If this sin in your life wasn't there, you could make more fruit. You could be a better disciple maker. Cut. Brian, this area of your life doesn't match up with what my son is modeled for you. Cut. I've never been a grapevine. I have no idea what it feels like to be pruned, but I bet it hurts. Y'all think so? I bet when God looks at me and he looks at us and he sees things that need to be cut, it hurts a little bit. But why is he doing it? Because he's a mean, spiteful gardener? No. He's doing it so that I can bear much fruit. I look at my life and I think, well, I probably bear fruit, right? I know that I've shared my faith with people. I know that as a believer, I'm growing, I'm maturing, right? But do I bear much fruit? Is anybody else a little uncomfortable with this passage? I don't know. Bear much fruit? So the person that's all the way in chair four is getting pruned. right? Now, the vines who don't bear fruit at all, they're cut off and burned. But the vines that are bearing fruit are going to be pruned so they can be mature, so they can be better grapevines, right? Much fruit. You know, to get to that point, I got to trust that the gardener knows best. The gardener, if he cuts off dead leaves, it doesn't do anything, right? They're already dead. But sometimes he cuts off live parts of the vine so that the other parts can be even stronger, right? Man. So really, I got to trust God a whole lot and know that he's a far better gardener than I am. And he knows how to make fruit way better than I do, right? I wonder, put our church on the map here. Where are we in this? I hope we're not non-believers, right? Surely we're sitting in a chair, right? But are we baby Christians that are just looking at their own needs, trying to figure out how they can get their own wants fulfilled? Are we maturing? Are we growing up? Are we starting to look outside? And then, I mean, do we take the next step and say we are bearing much fruit? That's what we're going to be talking about in this series. And we're going to try and figure out how we as individuals, but also we as the church, can keep moving this direction. Okay, that's the goal. You know what I love about this? These four invitations that Jesus gave, he took people from wherever they are, and he just asked them to take one more step, right? He didn't tell the guy that was sitting over on the floor to bear much fruit, right? He doesn't even know what fruit is, right? He just says, come and you will see, right? And then the guy here, he said, come and follow me. Just take one more step, right? And then he takes them one more step until we get to bear much fruit, right? Jesus took anybody from where they are, wherever they were, and said, hey, let's go one more step towards being disciples. You know what I thought about the other day? Okay, so the apostles on the day of Pentecost, right? Jesus went up into heaven, the Holy Spirit came down, they preached a sermon, 3,000 people became Christians that day, okay? Big day. What if those 3,000 and some people, when they became Christians, they did not catch that Jesus wanted them to tell other people, right? What if they thought, this is just for us, we have seen Jesus and what he did, and we are counting on him to forgive our sins. We are baptized, but that's it. What would happen? Where would we be? Not here, right? I'd be sleeping in. We lost an hour of sleep, right? From me to the day of Pentecost, there is an unbroken chain of people who said, come and follow Jesus. You ever thought about that? I want so bad someday when we've got lots of time in heaven, right? And I'll get to sit down and ask God, like, can you tell me who my spiritual great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandpa was? You know what I mean? Because that line is going to go all the way to the day of Pentecost. That was ground zero for the church. You know what is even more scary? It could stop with me. Like, I could say right now, I'm scared. I don't want to tell people about Jesus. I don't want to make disciples. People are going to be mad at me. I'm going to be unpopular, right? And the branch stops. And then that's where I wonder if that's how the dead branches come on the vine. They're not making any fruit at all. Cut. Y'all ever think about that? Do you want the branch to start with to stop with this group of people in the room? No. I don't want to. I want to be pushed. I want to keep making disciples. I don't want the kingdom to stop with this room. Do you? So, in the coming weeks, we're going to expand a little bit on each of these topics. We're going to talk about methods to go from chair 1 to 2 and 2 to 3 and 3 to 4. And I tell you what, if I had to judge myself, right, I bet we all have a tendency to kind of round up a little bit, you know? Like, I'm much more mature than I actually am, right? That's probably the case. One thing I think is going to be a good thing is Sher made up a quiz, you know, like fill out these forms and kind of look at your life, and it'll help us help you determine where you are on this, you know, on this spectrum, what chair you're sitting in, and what are the things you need to do to move up a level or two. Okay, we're going to worry about that next week. Guys, I don't want to just sit. You know, when we just sit, you know, we get lazy, we get sick. When we're not growing, chances are we're going the opposite direction. Y'all ever seen that in your lives? I want to push us, and I want to be pushed, and I want to push you towards bearing much fruit. That's the goal. One of the things I love about communion time, you know, it's a ritual, kind of. We sort of shy away from rituals because if we do it, you know, too often, we stop thinking about why we're doing it, right? But every single Sunday, we get together and we take the bread and the juice, and it is a minute for us to just stop everything, quit talking about chairs, and look right at the cross. You guys with me? That's why we do communion every single Sunday. I'm going to pray. You guys know how this works. There's communion all over the room. When you feel ready, when you feel like you have kind of aligned yourself with what Jesus did on that cross, then you can get up and take communion anywhere. Now, guys, this is second service, okay? We would love to see groups of people praying with each other. We would love for you to go up to somebody and say, hey, I know that God is going to keep moving you towards chair four. Don't give up. I know that there are people in here right now that are this close to walking away from Jesus. And they need you to come up to them and encourage them and pray with them and saying, don't give up now. Keep pushing. I know that there are people that are struggling with unimaginable things, and they need to know that they are surrounded by their brothers and sisters. Guys, I come up here and I'm looking around and I know the things that people are struggling with, and so many people are struggling with them alone. They think they're the only ones in this room that are having problems. You're not. So let's use this communion time to focus on the cross and encourage one another, pray for one another. These guys are going to play as long as they need to, okay? So don't worry about that. Ask God right now, what does he want to say to you? And what does he want to say through you to somebody else today? Will y'all pray with me?